Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is brother Jay.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 2017 movie Rememory, directed by Mark Polanski. Do you know what he directed?
No.
Penelope.
I'm not familiar.
Christina Ricci has a pig nose.
Nope. Never seen it. Never heard of it. I'm not a huge Christina Ricci fan. I know that's blasphemy to all the goth kids of my generation.
Yeah, I didn't see. I had no desire to see Christina Ricci do the pig face movie.
Wait, she actually had like a pig face?
Yeah, pig nose. Yep.
Was this?
I think it was supposed to be like a heartwarming.
Was this like a mask kind of movie, or was this kind of a ha ha funny kind of movie?
You know, I don't know because I didn't see it, but I think it was probably like a mask movie where it was a ridiculous concept that they turned into something that they thought was being more artful. But again, I don't know. It's hard for me.
I'm referring to the Cher movie.
No, I understand. Yeah.
Okay. I just want to make the distinction for the audience. I was not talking about the Jim Carrey movie, The Mask. I was talking about the Cher. I just forgotten his name.
Somebody stop me. Eric Stoltz.
Eric Stoltz, yes. Yeah. Was that Laura Dern?
I do not remember. Are you going to look it up?
We're off the rails.
We are. It's okay. Well, okay. So this is one of those situations where it was my turn to pick, and I had looked at what was on Netflix available streaming, and I gave you a choice of three, none of which I had seen. And I wanted something kind of science fiction-y because I know, you know, at least I have the impression you're a science fiction-y kind of guy.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, this will be, you know, either any of these three movies would be up your alley. So I let you pick of the three, and you picked Rememory. Again, sight unseen.
Laura Dern.
Okay. Mask, Laura Dern. Mm-hmm. So, what did you think? What's your initial reaction to Rememory?
Oh, boy.
Did you enjoy the movie?
I didn't hate it.
That's actually better than I thought when you sent me a text saying, oi, this movie.
I had some problems with this movie. I'm hoping you can convince me it's better than I think it is. I don't think it's a great movie. I think it's an okay movie. It's fine. It's a science fiction movie. It did some things that surprised me, which was good, but it also did some things that just annoyed me to no end. So
it's not a science fiction movie, actually. It is a relationships movie that
shorned with some science fiction.
Yeah, they used a science fiction-y premise to kind of wedge, and they had some this movie tried to do some weird things, and I think they were successful in some of them. I think I had kind of the same reaction the first time I saw it. I was like, well, let's just get this on the table first. If Peter Dinklage, he's one of the greatest actors of our generation.
Yeah, he's really good.
He can do more with like a micro expression.
Mm-hmm.
It's so. And maybe because I just noticed it, because in this movie there's a lot of, like, his character has kind of got these bottled up feelings. So there's a lot of, like, face twitchiness, but it's so effective, and he's so good.
Well, and he's in almost the entire movie.
Oh, yeah.
There's very little of the movie he's not in.
Also, it's not about him being a little person. His character didn't have incidental to be a little person. It had nothing to do with that.
And it's not mentioned ever.
No.
At no point is it any... I mean, it's just part of the universe.
Exactly, yeah.
Which so, I appreciated that.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't like Tiptoes 2.
Well, that's the problem, is that we've only seen... on this podcast, I think we've only referenced the Dink. Peapod doesn't want to be called that.
Probably not.
Mr. Dinklage. In Elf and Tiptoes.
And I saw him on the first one or two seasons of Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah, me too. And he was also really good at Nip Tuck.
Oh, I see. I never got to Nip Tuck.
Nip Tuck was a guilty pleasure of mine.
What?
Okay. It's got all the prestige, like cable TV shows of that era, where there were a lot.
Was that like an FX?
Yes, I believe so. Network? Yep.
Okay.
Or maybe even FXX.
No, it's probably just FX. Existed then. Yeah.
Yeah, but because it was cable, there was dealt with plastic surgeons. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of like anatomy you get to see, and it was anyway. I recommend Nip Tuck. It was like Dexter. It after the first season or so, when you start getting into the characters, it really got kind of interesting. But it wasn't as goofy as Dexter. Well, no, that's not true. It was as goofy as Dexter. It was kind of like it was more along the lines of 6 Feet Under, but more fun, because 6 Feet Under kind of got more weird and dark as it went on.
So. Peter Dinklage is in the upcoming The Dwarf.
Sure.
He is in The Toxic Avenger.
Okay, excellent. Apparently we're going to see him in some Marvel movies coming up on our calendar.
Really? Oh, okay. Oh, all right. Infinity War, apparently. The Angry Birds movie.
I'm sure.
Ice Age Avalanche.
Well, he's got a great voice.
Game of Thrones, the Telltale Game series, Destiny, the game, X-Men, Days of Future Past. He was on Sesame Street in 2013.
Of course.
Ice Age Continental Drift game, Ice Age Continental Drift movie, Scrat's Continental Crackup Part 2. I will not go on. He's got much more. He's actually got an impressive list of stuff he's in. He's been working a long time. Yeah,
he's a great actor. He's the reason why I even gave this movie like a second thought. Mm. Because at the heart of it, it's just kind of a whodunit. But I thought it actually achieved its goal of getting a little deeper as well.
It had some social commentary.
Absolutely. So here's the issues that are explored. And so before we ruin it for everybody, if you haven't seen it, I do recommend that you see it if you have the opportunity, because we are going to ruin it. And it does have kind of a twist to it. Although when I watched it the second time this week, even knowing how it ended and everything, I still got a lot out of it. I thought the acting was really, really well done.
I will give the movie credit that I guessed something in the movie early and was correct, but I did not guess the twist and the ending correct. Okay. Jesse did. Boyfriend Jesse got the end, but he didn't guess the early thing that I did.
So. Ah, okay. Yeah, and I didn't guess any of it, as it turns out. I was just being swept away. but two things. Well, actually, one observation first is this had a great synth score.
Mm-hmm. It sounded great.
The score was fantastic. Because again, some of this movie, Peter Dinklage is basically like a gumshoe. It's kind of like almost a film noir. But here's the issues that are explored. The movie states that we are nothing more than the memories we keep. And it talks a lot about how memory is subjective and it changes through all the filters. Depending on where you are in your life, when you remember a very specific event, will color, or things that have happened will color your memory of the situation. And the big question it tries to ask is, would you want to know the truth if you had the opportunity? Because this movie is built on the science fiction principle that there's a machine where you can record somebody's like their memories directly from their brain. So it's just a straight objective view of what happened.
It's a complete actual recording representation of what truly happened as opposed to what your memory filters out.
Yes. And so I mean, I like that concept. That's fun. You know, we've talked about, we've seen a lot of movies lately that talked about things like that. And like with the...
It's kind of like the opposite of the Dead Zone.
Yeah. Or sort of similar, but different from the Discovery.
Yes.
Partly yeah. in the, you know, part because part of the question is, would you want to know the truth? Like, would you like to relive or witness part of your own life and see it as it actually happened instead of as you remembered it?
And what as would your, it as your mental psyche is actually protecting you?
Exactly. Yeah. Could you handle it? Like, I think it's funny. On the most part, I don't want to know.
Yeah.
Like, I'm fine. If given the opportunity, this was not in the movie, but like if you're given the opportunity to like revisit an important moment of your life, but through the eyes of somebody else who was there, oh, I don't think I want to see that either. Like, no, I don't need the mirror on myself that closely usually.
From a certain perspective, it would be nice to have some memories that I only have pieces of, but I think the premise of this concept is that he wanted to use this to help heal people who had traumatic memories and events that altered their lives in a negative way.
I wonder, you know, I think Dr. Wonder should watch this movie.
Well, that'd be good. I'll ping him. But you know, the premise was that he was a doctor trying to help people, right? Trying to help them work through their trauma by seeing the memory from its objective reality and then working through it. Now, I have no desire to relive trauma. Like, I've got enough of that. But there's certain memories, like childhood memories, that are good that I would like to reinforce or at least have a record of so that I have it. Because there's certain things that were really precious that I remember that as the older I get, I'm like, it turns a different color. It's, you know, it's still there. Not quite as sharp.
Sure,
but it would be nice to kind of be able to have that just as a memory. But as far as the whole, it's almost kind of sinister because in some ways, as exhibited later in the movie, this can be used as an interrogation device.
Oh yeah,
and completely used almost against your will.
Oh yeah, this can be used for law enforcement. Absolutely.
Yeah, and so that immediately put my hackles up. So
yeah, well, and. Yeah, I mean, the other thing is, yeah, you're right. The inventor of this machine is a psychiatrist, and he or a psychologist, one of the two. But his whole idea is you don't use this machine on your own. You are specifically guided through this, which is that's why I'm curious to see what Dr. Wonders would say, because, you know, Dr. Wonders has some tools. But you remember when you were talking about, I can't remember which, it was one of our episodes, I don't know, a couple hundred or so ago, when you went to some sort of like mandated work-related sensitivity training, and yes. They made you like bring up like bad memories. Mm-hmm. And I was appalled at the unethical nature of that whole thing, because they basically re-traumatized everybody in that room, but didn't give them any resources to handle that trauma.
Yep.
That's what this movie also sort of scratches at, that, you know, Peter Dinklage's character gets a hold of this machine and he's trying to do this on his own. And that's not healthy.
Well, he's trying to do this on his own as well as he's actually got two chips on his shoulder. He wants to relive the events of what he doesn't remember to remember, because he can't remember fully what happened. But he also feels obligated to find out who murdered the doctor.
Yes. Yes.
And so he's kind of competing.
Which is the film noir aspect of it. Because this is, like I said, a whodunit.
He's kind of competing against himself.
Yeah.
Because the more he works at it, the more he may be undermining his own success.
Exactly.
So.
But. Yeah. And another thing before we dive right in is I love the fact that they got this machine but didn't explain it too much.
Well, I also like that they didn't even bother. Like, they just called it Cortex.
Yeah. Yep.
Like, it was so low key, and it was fine because it was just the MacGuffin, right? Yeah. You didn't need it to be super fancy. It looked pretty low tech. I mean, it obviously was high tech, but yeah. It was very uncomplicated, oh, yeah. which I appreciated. Mm-hmm. You know, yep. It was very simplistic. It used what I assume were microscope slides because that's what they looked like. If anybody remembers what a microscope is, so I appreciated kind of some of the simplicity of this, and this was a really small film.
Oh yeah, yeah.
This was another small film, which you know, I think for a couple of years we're going to see a bunch of really small films.
Yeah, which is not a bad thing.
No,
like maybe because we're watching so many Marvel movies that are big, gigantic, bombastic films. It's nice to have a small film with good actors to remind you what it's like, that every experience doesn't have to be $100 million in CGI.
Well, and with the exception of the funny CGI at the beginning of the movie with the presentation of the Cortex machine.
Yes.
Because that was just ridiculous and bad. The rest of it seemed just, I mean, it was a gorgeous film.
Oh, yeah.
It was one of those beautiful things where the scenes were great, the lighting was great, the positions were great, and even the set pieces were great. So the architecture was... So the thing about me is I couldn't figure out where this movie was supposed to be, where it was supposed to be set.
Exactly. Because
it had a very like Swedish, Norwegian kind of village appeal.
Yeah, it could have been any fairly modern city near water.
I the first thing I thought of is like, this could be like next door to, you know, Lisbeth. So
it could be, or it could be like Redmond, Washington.
Yeah. That, yeah. Equally. Yeah.
Or
equally
Cupertino, probably. California.
Well, it was too gray and cold for Cupertino.
Probably. Yeah. But yeah, it definitely had a, but again, it didn't go into too much of that either.
Didn't need to.
Yeah. I like the fact that, like, as you said, the machine is simple, but they also give you the rules of the machine and they don't violate those rules. Because as it turns out, the movie is not about the machine tricking anybody. No. Like, as it turns out, the machine is not the villain in this movie. The machine really just is the MacGuffin.
And the machine is as advertised and doesn't exceed that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I appreciate that, because if that had been the plot twist, that would have been super crankyville.
See, this had every right to be a crappy movie.
It really could have been awful. Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
But. Oh, and again, one other thing, you know, just another thing, just Columbo this whole movie.
Just one more thing.
Do you know who was originally cast as the, you know, so Julia Armand plays the doctor's wife. Hmm. Do you know who was originally cast as the doctor's wife?
Juliana Margulies?
Nope.
Oh.
Catherine O'Hara.
Really?
Yeah. From Schitt's Creek and the Christopher Guest movies.
That would have been a little awesome, though.
It would have been a different movie.
I don't know.
I don't think I've ever seen Catherine O'Hara in a serious role.
I think she could pull it off.
I'm sure she could pull it off. But
I think she could do, because now she's at that age now where she can kind of push that smoky Lucille Ball later stage life kind of Betty Davis vibe.
Hmm.
So I suspect she could have pulled off a pretty dark, nearly villainous portrayal. I mean, you know, think Cruella de Vil, right?
Have you seen the trailer for the new Cruella movie?
No.
It looks great.
Okay.
I really do want to watch the new Cruella de Vil movie.
All right. Well, you know, Disney has, you know, Disney owns everything now, so you can Netflix watch party, so.
Yeah, I think, though, that there's a couple movies coming up, like Godzilla versus King Kong is going to just show up on HBO. And there's a couple other movies that'll just show up on HBO or on Netflix. But I think Cruella is going to be one of those movies that shows up on HBO or Netflix, but it's going to be like a $20 ticket to see it. Like Mulan. Because Disney had some success with Mulan doing that.
It'll be one of those where you have to pay for it.
Yeah. Hello. Cruella is going to show up on Disney Plus. It won't be showing up on Netflix.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I got it. The teleparty thing, the Netflix party, which is now teleparty, includes Hulu, HBO, Netflix, and Disney Plus now.
So. And so you kind of do a Zoom meeting with and watching a movie at the same time?
Not really a Zoom meeting as much as it you have a person starts the movie and gives the link to everybody else. and then everybody else joins, and one person's in a good method of this. One person's in control of the start and stop, but then you have a chat window where everybody can like chat and put emoticons, and they can like banter.
Oh, so you can like start a movie and pause it until you get enough people, and then
play. You can. And again, I would only put one person in control of that.
Yeah.
Because you have the option to lock that out. Otherwise, everybody can pause it and like, no. But, you know, what you do is everybody's watching it together at the same time. Because it does. It starts it for all of you and stops it for all of you.
We should talk about that.
And we could. And so then you can agree, like, if it's a two-hour movie, you can say, well, we're going to stop at, you know, hour five for a break.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, yeah, it's doable. I mean, all of us are in the same country, so it's super easy. When you're not in the same country, it becomes problematic because... Yeah,
right.
Yeah, well, because Netflix in the U.S., Disney Plus in the U.S.,
oh, yeah.
HBO in the
exactly.
U.S.
Yeah,
is a different domain
yeah.
than it is in the U.K.
Yeah.
or Europe. So they're not cross-compatible. So
interesting.
So yeah, we could pick something and do that.
We should totally do that. Watch a movie together at the same time in real time.
I know, that'd be weird.
Except I wonder if we wouldn't be able to play the sound of the movie over the podcast. That's the problem, because we'd get into rights issues there. Like we can record an episode where we all watch a movie together, as long as we don't have the movie playing in the background, I think. I mean, granted.
If I was watching it, though, the audio wouldn't show up in my recording.
Okay, yeah.
It would be separate.
So we would just be like sync along, like everybody here, we're starting the movie now, if you want.
Although the problem is there'd be a lot of us watching a movie, so there'd be a lot of silence.
That's true. Yeah. Well, you can always, again, edit that with, I don't know. That's just an idea. I mean, we could actually do it without recording it, you know, like for fun.
Or we could do that. Or we could watch it first on our own and then watch it together and discuss it as it's going through.
Well, and yeah, like I know that... the United Nations of Horror have done some Twitch movie watch-alongs.
Yeah. And is that kosher?
Well, they're using public domain movies.
Ah, okay.
So that's easy. You know, you watch The Last Man on Earth, you watch, you know, but Santa Claus and the Martians or whatever, watch Nosferatu. You know, those are all public domain movies, so you're good to go. Yeah. Okay, so let's dive into Rememory. So, Peter Dinklage. No, go ahead.
No, it's not a lot. This is not a big movie.
No, not really. And we are going to spoil it. So, just so you know, spoiler alert. Again, we shouldn't have to do it because we're going to spoil every movie. In fact, that should be part of our new theme song is, we will spoil the movie. We're going to spoil the movie. We're going to spoil the movie. Not in a creepy way. So, TM. Okay. Peter Dinklage. Stars as Sam Bloom. And it's funny because he does use a whole bunch of different names during this movie, which is kind of fun. Again, it's kind of a film noir sort of thing. So Peter Dinklage stars as Sam Bloom. In the beginning of the film, he's celebrating with his brother Dash, Matt Ellis, who's, by the way, only on the second viewing did I realize Dash was just short for Dashiell, which, again, another film noir kind of thing. Because you wouldn't name somebody Dash.
Because they were Samuel and Dashiell.
Yeah. It's great. Anyway, so Sam and Dash are at a bar celebrating that Dash has got a recording contract and on his way to superstardom or something. And yet he wants to go fishing with his brother. So that night results in a car crash that kills Dash and leaves Sam with a fading memory of what Dash's last words were. Which, by the way... That is Sam's motivation. He wants to remember, he wants to re-experience it so he knows what his brother's last words were. Which is, it's great. I mean, yeah. It's perfect motivation.
I was not sorry that his brother was killed.
Well, I don't know. His brother was fine. So fast forward a few years later, and we see that Sam, he is a professional figurine maker. He makes models. And he goes to listen to a speaker named Gordon Dunn, played by Martin Donovan, who we know from Ant-Man, Insomnia, and Tenet. By the way, Martin Donovan was great in this role.
Yeah.
And especially since a lot of his role was done with like a fisheye lens, because he is Mr. Body. He's the dead guy in the beginning of this movie that we have to find out who killed. And a lot of what you see is him through the lens of the machine, which it's funny how your brain gives you a fisheye view of the world. Anyway. And also his middle name is Oliver. So his initials are G-O-D, which is pretty funny.
I didn't catch that.
Yeah. Anyway, so he's the scientist who created a machine that allows people to record and watch their memories. And the goal is to help people with diseases like Alzheimer's or brain damage that remove memories. Before he can speak to Dunn, Sam watches several interactions he has with various people. So he sees the lecture promoting this product that they're about to launch. And during the presentation, a woman gets up and leaves, upset about the presentation.
She's really not happy at all. She's clearly upset at what she saw.
Yes. So Gordon, who again is sort of both doctor and salesman of this thing, he comes down to the mixer mingler thing after, and this woman confronts him and says that it was unethical for him to use her memories. And he says, listen, Wendy, you knew what you're getting into. You know what you signed up for. Let's talk about this elsewhere, because this year you're making a scene. But again, Dunn isn't necessarily a super bad guy. I mean, like, he's not portrayed as an evil guy. In fact, spoiler, there's nobody in this movie who's an evil guy. Well, hold on. When we get there, because I have some thoughts about who you're thinking of, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, if my Miss Cleo vibe is strong. So Sam goes to Dunn's office. By the way, Sam has penned this letter to Dunn, and he's going to give it to him at some point. And he doesn't have an opportunity to give it to him at this function because Dunn leaves. So he ends up going to Dunn's office to speak with him. But before he can even get out of his own car, several people show up. And one is this guy. Who Anton Yelchin.
I know. When I first saw him on screen, I thought, God, he's familiar, but I didn't realize when this movie was made. I thought this was a much more recent movie, and so I thought that looks just like Anton Yelchin, and I didn't assume it was, and then I went and looked, and I'm like, holy crap, it was, and then I felt really bad.
Well, I was also a little disappointed because, he was literally holding Chekhov's gun. Thank you. Anyway, so
nice. Yeah. That was nicely done.
So he leaves and is the second person that shows up is Wendy, this girl from the party, and the guy leaves. Anton Yelchin leaves, and then Wendy leaves in a hurry, and Wendy leaves like with a little backpack, and I don't think it's clear at this point if Sam sees that she has the machine or not, but she drives away. And so Sam actually ends up following her and sees that she goes to Dunn's home and
leaves pretty quickly.
Yeah, leaves pretty quickly from the home. So the next day, by the way, sorry. So the next day, they find Gordon Dunn dead in his office. So dun, 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 we have a whodunit. Who murdered Gordon? And as far as the people at, Cortex or whatever, the company are concerned, and the police are concerned, there's only really three suspects. The guy that went in there, the girl went in there, and of course now Peter Dinklage, who's a weirdo who was hanging out in the parking lot. But, yeah.
And of course the interesting thing is there's no obvious sign of death. Of
yes.
Gordon.
Yep.
And yet there's bullet holes all over the office.
Yeah. There's bullet holes in his wall, but he's not like laying in a pool of blood. He's just laying on the floor.
Yeah. So where's Angela Lansbury? That's what I want to know.
Well, again, this could be an Angela Lansbury movie.
Yeah.
Drew and I are going to talk about a movie that also could have been an Angela Lansbury movie next week. That's The Wolf of Snow Hollow, which I encourage you to watch. It is available to you. So we have Sam, who's like, the guy died? What? So Sam, presumably thinks he knows something or needs whatever. The next thing we see is well, we see somebody break it to Gordon's wife, Julia Ormond, that her husband was killed, so or has died. So Sam shows up at the Dunn house at like for a like funeral reception or something. And he shows up bearing a bottle of whiskey and the letter that he had written to Gordon. And again, this is the first point where it's like, oh, Dinklage is doing a thing with these like micro expressions. It's so great. And they're probably not micro at all. It's like he's got like when she answers the door and he says that he's there for the reception, she's like, yeah, I send everybody home. You know, I appreciate your well wishes, but sorry, I can't handle it. And he like frowns just like to himself.
Yeah.
And starts to go away and then comes back and sort of flags her through the window and makes a sort of a dumb joke. And she asks how he knew Gordon. And he says, well, Gordon saved my life. And so she says, well, that's the story I do want to hear. So he comes in bearing gifts and they drink. Well,
that's whiskey. A pretty effective line, by the way.
Oh, it's yeah. Turns out he's got a bunch of effective lines.
Yeah.
But
so at this point, did you believe him? When he said that,
I didn't know. When he told the story,
yeah,
I assumed. I think I was just going along for the ride. I didn't assume that the story would be wrong in any way.
I assumed it was bullshit.
Okay. And by the way, skip to the end. It was only half bullshit, right? I mean, he had this conversation with Gordon at the bar, didn't he?
He had a conversation.
Yes. Okay.
And they had the flashback of them both on the roof. So part of it. I mean, there was some truth to it, but well, at the time that he had switched names, because he used a different name.
Yes.
And he had already been through all this weird subterfuge at watching the different people run around at Cortex. And then he went and stole, or I'm sorry, we haven't got there yet, yeah. But he watched the device get dropped off at Freddy's house.
Yeah.
I immediately just put all nothing but nefarious intent upon him.
So. Upon Sam? I was taking wherever Peter Dinklage wants to take me, I'm going to go. he's our entry character in this whole thing, our surrogate. So, yeah. But yeah, he goes in and he tells her the story about how the way Gordon saved his life is that they were at this bar during like some sort of storm somewhere, and Gordon had, I don't know, it was at the end of some sort of meeting or something, and he was having a long day, and of course Sam, this is post brother getting killed, so he was at a rough point in his life. By the way, sneaky dad stuff comes up in this movie, just kind of, he just touches on it. It's really effective. So they end up, Gordon says, you know, hey, either we can sit here with our own thoughts or we can really, make a thing of it. So they end up laughing and drinking and telling each other life stories and blah, blah, blah. And then they go up on the roof during the storm and end up getting locked out of the building. So they end up on the roof for the entire night. And in the morning, having weathered the storm, Sam knew that he was going to be okay. Right? Now, turns out there's a little more to the story.
A lot more.
To Sam's motivation to talk to Gordon.
Yeah,
because Sam, again, spoiler, Sam knew who Gordon was. They didn't just randomly bump into each other. Sam has been trying to deliver some sort of message to Gordon for a long time. But anyway, in the context of this part of it, this is where his wife, Julia Ormond, you know, has a nice little discussion with him, and then Sam leaves, and they wish each other well. And then we find out that Sam has stolen some keys while he's in there, and Sam goes back and breaks into her house while she is in there, steals the machine and a bunch of the little glass slide memory things. We learn a little bit later through some exposition that that Gordon's the only one who knows how this machine actually works. Like one of the photographic memory geeks, it could, or it does end up actually, sort of reverse engineering how he put it all together. But like, Gordon doesn't believe in keeping things like on the cloud or available to everybody else. All these memories that he's recorded are recorded onto these glass memory devices. Like, there's no, there
they're
is
basically
no,
like glass thumb drives.
Yeah, but there's no way to like just upload them to the cloud or something.
Yeah.
So
he didn't want them on the cloud. No. He wanted them so that they were completely self-contained.
Exactly.
Which is kind of genius when you think about it, because it's glass, it's memory, so it's fragile and can be broken.
Yeah. Well, plus, you know, theoretically, it falls under HIPAA, so under medical records, right? I mean, it's notes from a patient.
All kinds of your medical stuff's in the cloud.
Well,
don't,
that's true.
Don't even have no illusion about that.
Okay, we'll have to talk to Jerry about that too. Anyway, so. Sam ends up taking the machine and all of the memory things he can shove into a bag. So he has got all of this, all of basically the test group. And he is going to try to figure out, he's going to Sam Spade this stuff, to use a Dashiell Hammett thing, to try to figure out who killed Gordon.
You didn't put that together, Sam Spade, Dashiell Hammett?
I didn't.
Sam and Dash?
No, that's funny.
Oh.
Yeah, no, until just now.
Okay.
What's that meme? I was this many years old when I found out that happened. Yeah. So he, because he's a model builder, he has all these little miniature people that he's painting and he's using it to visualize and he's taking notes and he's also watching, the video memories of these test subjects, and he's trying to figure out from the videos who they are, and therefore, you know, who was last to see Gordon, and therefore who may have killed Gordon. So, again, according as far as we know during this point, Sam's entire motive, besides finding out who killed Gordon, is also he wants to remember the moment of the car crash so that he finds out what his brother's last words really were. Because, you know, unencumbered by the shock of the incident, he should be able to, you know, be able to figure it out.
Yeah, he says he knew it, but had forgot it. He can't recall it. He's positive he knew it.
Yeah. During stressful times, people sometimes have large gaps in their memory. Or sometimes remember things super vividly.
Or remember them wrong.
Exactly, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, again, we could get into a whole existential conversation about, you know, where I eventually have a meltdown and talk about color blindness again. But, you know, again, if we're all we are our memories and our memories are faulty, then what are we? We're whoever we want to be. Sam's trying to put together this whole, you know, figure out who the test group is, figuring that one of them is probably the killer. And he's trying to amateur sleuth this whole thing. And
his mannerisms drive me crazy, by the way, because he's writing things down on little placards, but he's also using like a Dymo label for some of it.
Yep.
Pick a method.
Oh, no. He's got a little notebook. He's got these little miniatures. He's got. Yeah.
Also, in this day and age, wouldn't you have a 3D printer do most of that?
No. There's something to be said for making models. And maybe he did 3D print the actual figures. He just painted them himself.
That's true. Yeah. All right, that's fair.
He ends up cycling through these people he tracks down, and this is also one of those things that's cobbled together between, actually, it's between not even a plot synopsis in IMDb, but a review that had spoilers in it that had a really fairly decent plot synopsis up to a point. And then some Wikipedia stuff. So if I jump around, I apologize. Plus, this movie plays a little bit with time because it's about memories. So as this is all transpiring, we have a character that I actually wasn't really talked about in either plot synopsis because his character really isn't super essential to the plot. But that's Lawton, who's the partner or the chief or whatever, the head of the business department of Cortex.
Is this where you try and convince me he wasn't the villain?
Well, I'm not saying he wasn't the villain. Well, what I'm saying is Henry Ian Cusick, who's the actor, is an Alan Rickman-looking mother trucker.
He's been in plenty of stuff, I think.
He was in Lost, I know that. But
That might be where I knew him from.
He's junior Alan Rickman.
Yeah,
he gave up that whole Rickman vibe.
Yeah?
And of course, Laden wants the machine because Laden, as it turns out, you know, he has a product to put out. Oh, and one of the things we knew right from the get-go that I skipped over was that the science was flawed. There was something that happened where Gordon wanted to push off the launch date because there was some problem. We learned that problem was that one of the test subjects killed himself due to the machine, basically. So,
about that.
Yeah, so that's not a positive thing. That's one of the, if you're AstraZeneca, you kind of hide those results as much as possible. Poor AstraZeneca. Oh, I hate when billion-dollar companies have bad things happen to them. Okay, so again, we see this all from Sam's point of view and Sam's detecting, which is great. And
he's quite good at being a detective.
Oh, sure. Yeah, and okay, because he slides right into the fake names and giving people like not quite the truth, but just enough truth, you know. Like when the first guy he visits is an Alzheimer's patient, a dementia patient. He tricks his way in to talk to a dementia patient to get information out of them, and yet it's a touching part of the movie.
Well, and also he thinks to look at the sign-in sheet to get the next woman's name.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah.
He's got some good skills.
Sure,
so,
he does. Yeah, yeah.
You know, he's got he could have another job.
Oh wait till Remembering Too.
So Electric Boogaloo.
Yes. Yeah, so
that never gets old.
No, it doesn't. Well, except again, that damn racist group, the Boogaloo Boys or whatever. Fuck them. Okay, so Sam ends up meeting with a bunch of the test subjects, including Todd, played by Anton Yelchin from Terminator Salvation. Oh, poor guy.
And
well, the Star Trek movies is Chekhov.
Yes.
Yeah. Todd was the guy who met with Dunn in his final moments. Todd is also the guy with Chekhov's gun again, who shot the holes in Gordon's wall.
And is seemingly unhinged. Very unhinged.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Made to be looking very unhinged.
No, he's not happy. In fact, every time Sam talks to people about the test group, everybody mentions, yeah, you should talk to Todd. He's the angry one. Yeah. So, yeah. Also, there's a memory here that I don't quite understand, but well, I'll ask you about that later. Maybe I don't know if it's important. That's another reason why I watched it again last night, is there's a section of memories that I don't quite get. Anyway, so Sam is also trying to extract his own memories, but of course he's getting closer and closer as the movie goes on to figuring out what his brother said at the end. But along this time, the test subjects report that he ends up going to this the woman's house that had seen the Alzheimer's guy, and that's the woman. Oh, no, that was the girlfriend. Okay, because Wendy was upset about her memories. She's actually Gordon's girlfriend. He was having an affair with her, or did briefly,
correct,
and broke it off. Well, sort of. Todd ended up threatening him to. Todd was going to tell Gordon's wife that Gordon was having an affair with Wendy.
Which turns out she already knew.
Yeah. It's very soap opera here. By the way, did you listen to the Wolfwalker episode?
Yes.
Okay. Because when Drew said the words, well, that was Robin, right? I could not help but to put the Santa Barbara theme in there.
I laugh.
Thank you. That's all I wanted. The joke for three, but it made me laugh. Okay. So, and I guess I had to extract credit for it. Because, you know, it's not satisfying if I'm the only one who laughs at it.
Sorry, I should have texted you.
No, it's okay. So Todd, I'm fragile, but not quite that fragile. So Todd's the guy who's unhinged, right? He's pissed at Gordon because he, as it turns out, he didn't ask to be part of the trial group. Gordon went after him, asked him to be in the trial group because Todd was involved in a workplace violence accident. That he had pretty much blacked out. His own memory was suppressed as a defense mechanism.
Yep.
So that he wouldn't go crazy. At least that's his thought. Is like your brain forgets stuff for a reason sometimes. So maybe re-experiencing the trauma is not the best thing, especially since we find out that one of the things that's one of the problems with this machine is that a side effect is you start seeing memories that or people from your memories when you're not watching the machine.
You have near waking dreams or hallucinations that are interactive.
What was the other term they used? Like time collapse or something? I don't know. I forget what. But anyway, yeah. So Sam starts to see his brother Dash. Yeah. And then ends up it gets more and more vivid, right? Which
it gets graphic.
Yeah. Which, by the way, for the Alzheimer's guy is great. The Alzheimer's guy who looks at the girl's boobs. Again, that's great. It turns out the Alzheimer's guy is the sweetest part of the whole movie. He just wants to remember. That's the machine is beautiful for him. Yeah, but for other people, maybe not so much. Maybe if you're dealing with trauma, which, by the way, Gordon's thing was to help people that had traumatic experiences. So you got to find some of those people.
That's what he said.
Yeah.
That's what he purports. That's the whole premise of them selling the machine is that they're going to commercialize this so it can be used as a therapy device. Because I think using it to sell it as some kind of memory storage device would probably raise the ire of a great many concerns.
Well, that's the difference between Gordon and Alan Rickman. Alan Rickman, he's the snidely whiplash character.
Oh yeah.
He just has a product to put out.
He wants to make that date.
Oh, he has to. He's made promises that if he doesn't keep, he will be screwed. And he's saying all the right things publicly, but privately he's like, we need to get this done. And then of course the employee with the photographic memory, Neil, who's the weirdo from IT, he's perfectly played as the weirdo from IT because we all know Neil. Yes. So at first we thought, of course, Todd was going to be the guy who killed Gordon. But Sam says, you know, if you didn't kill Gordon, then prove it. And has Todd put on the machine thing and remember so it's recorded on the device. And so we find out that, it turns out Todd didn't kill Gordon. Todd shot at Gordon, but Gordon basically talked him out of his tree, and Todd ran off.
Yeah.
And at that point, Sam is thinking, oh, crap, Wendy lied to me.
Yeah.
Wendy was the last person that saw Gordon, so maybe Wendy killed Gordon. But how are we going to get Wendy to put on the machine?
Now all I can think is that Joshua Path song.
Wendy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Highly inappropriate.
Well, yeah. So Wendy, who's played by Evelyn Brochu from Orphan Black, in order to get her to disclose what happened, he goes back to
Freddie.
Is Freddie Carolyn? I thought Carolyn is the name of the wife.
I thought it was Freddie.
Let's call her Julia, because she's Julia Ormond.
I keep saying Freddy, but... Oh, you're right. It was Carolyn.
Okay.
Who was Freddy?
I don't know who Freddy was.
I don't know why I have that name stuck
Freddy
in my
was
head.
Somebody.
Okay, maybe his assistant or something. I don't know. All right.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Okay. So
irrelevant.
So Sam decides to go back to Carolyn, Julia Ormond, and get her help to have Wendy disclose. Because it turns out Wendy just wants her memories back. That's Wendy's motivation, is to get her damn memories back. And by the way, Julia Ormond, as the wife, has kept everybody out of Gordon's study, even though everybody wants to go in there and pilfer his stuff. But she's like, I'm dealing with the death of my husband, and he's more important than his stuff. Like, he is not just his stuff.
Well, she makes the point that she wants him remembered for who he was, not the machine that he has or what he's made.
Exactly.
He is a person was more important than what he had created.
Yes. So, in a very clever way, Sam has to go back to Carolyn and say, I've got the machine, and I've been lying to you this whole time, but now I need a favor.
Well, I've been lying kind of.
Yeah.
I've been lying totally, but I've been totally honest. So, yeah. I'm only half a bastard. Because
it turns out I'm a bastard for a whole different reason. We're not going to find out until the end. Which you said Jesse figured that one out?
Yeah, I didn't see that one coming.
No, me either. So
Jesse was like, "Oh, he said I had that figured out."
Well, it makes complete sense. I mean, I didn't see it either. But it completely tracks. Anyway, so
well, I had some issues, but
okay. Well, we'll talk. Anyway, so Sam leaves Wendy a note saying, "Hey, if you want your memories back, come to the place where you got lost with your mom." And so they're at this sort of hedge maze thing. And in the middle, instead of seeing Sam, she sees Carolyn. And so it turns out, you know, of course, Carolyn knew who she was. And she, of course, knew who Carolyn was. And they have this great, like, wife,
mistress
kind of
showdown.
And it's short, but it's fairly satisfying.
It's pretty uncomfortable though too.
Oh yeah. No, neither of them are backing down. Nobody has any nice feelings for each other for sure.
Definitely not.
But to get her memories back, Carolyn wants her to wear the thing to remember what the last thing was. And, turns out, she didn't kill herself. She didn't kill Gordon.
Yeah. She didn't kill Gordon. Yeah.
And, so Julia's like, okay, Carolyn. Played by Julia, is like, okay, well, you fulfilled your part of the bargain. You probably did love him, whatever. Here are your memories. We shall not speak of this again. And that's when Wendy pulls out of her pocket the big gold GD memory thing of Gordon's memories. And later, with Sam there, Carolyn watches his last memories, because it turns out after Wendy left that night, after Todd left, then Wendy left, Gordon put the machine on himself again in order to delete some memories, right? Do you think that was
not after Wendy left, because Wendy took the machine.
Oh, I'm sorry. After Todd left, before Wendy got there. Because yes, you're right. What Wendy's memory was, his memory,
finding him.
Sorry. Wendy found him already dead and took the machine.
Yes.
That was how he knew that Wendy wasn't the killer. So, when you put the memory machine, memory card in, it turns out that after Todd left, Gordon plugged himself in and I guess was trying to delete some of his memories. And turns out Gordon's got some memories that we find out that are bad, because one of the reasons why the affair happened, or why he and his wife are not are a little bit estranged, is because they had a daughter that was killed, or that died. We saw a casket. We saw the daughter. We know the daughter is gone. We know that they drifted apart. We know Sam knows about this because of the conversation at the bar where Gordon told him his whole life story.
And Carolyn tells him at one point that the distance between them was made worse because she wasn't able to have another child.
Exactly. Yeah. And he devoted his whole energy after that point to this machine. Yeah. So we see Gordon, who's trying to edit his own memories, maybe delete the bad parts. He's trying to erase his daughter's funeral. He's trying to erase some other traumatic things, and yet keep the good memories there, the best memories.
And the machine alerts that there is some kind of synapse error.
Yes. So he has a fatal reaction to this. His brain does. And so, yeah. Which, by the way, would also delay the product launch, you'd think, if this were to become known.
Oh, maybe.
But then in another nice part of this movie, well, we then get to Sam's final, his final memories, because we've seen bits and pieces of this car accident. But what we didn't know was, we know that when they're driving along, both are a little drunk, or a lot drunk or whatever, and they're singing along, and they didn't see this car pull out in front of them, and so they smashed into this car, and he was wearing a seatbelt, but his brother was not. So Dash has hit the dash and is dying. And Sam is all in shock and he's bleeding and stuff. So he gets Dash's last words. And then he goes for help. And he also goes to see the other car. And in the other car, at the end of this movie, we see that in the other car is Gordon and Carolyn and the little girl in the back who is dead. And so Sam is like, oh my God. And the only thing he can do at this point, because he knows his dad's going to blame him, is he goes and he drags Dash's body from the passenger seat to the driver's seat so that he ruins Dash's reputation as well. So he has to keep this guilt. And by the way, the big old I did it for Johnny that he's been trying to figure out the whole time, Dash's last words, he was just finishing singing the song that they had been singing at the time. They didn't mean anything.
Nope.
What does mean something, though, is that he has now killed this couple's child and has covered it up in a way that it looks like he was not to blame.
There's so much forensically wrong with this, though. So,
as far as like if they reconstructed the accident,
of course,
yeah, there's that, yeah,
because there's injuries on the passenger side of the vehicle with no passenger.
Well, no, there presumably he was the passenger in the vehicle. I mean, he claimed to be the passenger of the vehicle, right?
I don't know. See, none of that's ever.
But yeah,
but none of that's ever exposed. But and here's my other point with this. It's a fatality accident. How is it that the injured party is in no way aware of basically the victimizer,
what do you mean?
Of the injuries?
Oh no! The you mean
there would have been some kind of legal disposition?
Why doesn't Gordon know about Sam?
Why don't they? Yeah,
Gordon knows about Dash theoretically, because Dash was the drunk driver. But yeah, you'd think if the passenger in the vehicle that killed your daughter and injured you and your wife was this midget guy, sorry, little person, you'd remember that.
There would have been some kind of legal in happening that would have involved a witness and an insurance company and many depositions. So I find it improbable that they would not have known who they all were.
Yeah, you think.
Yeah. So that was what really took me out of it. So having been in a car accident with lots of lawyers and attorneys.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Uh-oh, Jason might have some issues with this for that reason.
I actually, once they started driving down the road, I knew what was coming. I couldn't watch it.
Yeah.
I just waited for the noise because I'm like, I can't watch it. Because I was smart enough to know, and I was zen enough. I'm like, yeah. I know what's going to happen. I'm fine with it.
Problem is, car accidents are too well filmed these days.
Yeah. Yeah, they are.
Yeah. So, but again, a sweet part of this movie is we know all this now, right? And Sam knows all of it.
Yes.
And so Sam is chock full of micro expressions because he's trying to. He's trying to escape the situation. He's trying to confess. And he ends up basically telling Carolyn, who has just seen Gordon's like last moments of his life.
Which includes Carolyn seeing Gordon's in the car.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So Sam is trying to say, look, you know, I'm just so sorry. I'm so sorry about this whole thing. Here's my memory thing. Watch it. You'll understand why I'm sorry. And got to go. And Carolyn, who doesn't understand, basically just says, look, I don't know who you were, or I'm going to forget what the word she uses, but it's like, I don't know what you're trying to tell me, but I do know that you have helped me. Yeah. So you know, I don't know who the person you were was.
She doesn't need to relive a memory.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't care who you were. As far as I know, who you are now is. How it has helped me.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was the phrase that he uses on her at one point? It's like, you know, something like, I'm just glad we made this memory together or something.
Oh, I didn't.
It was a very, very nice little line, a tidy little line, but yeah. So, but at the end, instead of having a big thing where she sees what Sam is talking about, she has already put Gordon's little memory chip in this little bottle full of sand.
Jesse screamed. That's a Starbucks Frappuccino bottle.
Yeah, well, probably. But she then takes Sam's thing, which, by the way, Sam doesn't know this is happening. Sam is already gone at this point.
Yeah.
But she puts Sam's memories in the same bottle and closes it up and throws that Frappuccino bottle right into the ocean.
Tucks it.
Yeah.
in a lesser movie, it would have been a very different ending.
Yeah. Yeah. Because in this movie, she is grateful that Sam helped her find some answers. Sam has a resolution because he now remembers what happened. And so he has kind of closure on that. Although, again, Sam is going to need some therapy. he's going to have a lot more miniatures to work through before he forgives himself for this whole thing.
Yeah. But then Caroline has flashbacks of her daughter.
Yeah.
In the water. Yeah. But then the whole ending where Sam chucks the model into the bay or whatever the hell it is.
Yeah. And so what is that supposed to signify?
I don't know. What the hell? Yeah. That's what I was like. What
is that way? Now he knows the answer to the puzzle. He can forget those memories.
They should have just ended the movie before that. Because I was like, why? It did not add a single bit. If somebody can explain it to me,
you had to do something with Sam. You couldn't just leave Sam quite in the wind, like, after the Carolyn thing.
Sure you could.
No, because what happens after Sam and Carolyn part ways, and Sam doesn't know that Carolyn is never going to look at this memory thing. So Sam assumes that his whole thing is going to be exposed, and he is now the worst of the worst. All we're going to see is Sam's little model workshop, and then maybe a shadow, if they're being artistic, a shadow of his body swinging as he's hanging from the rafters, having killed himself. I mean, that's Sam's next move if Sam doesn't have some sort of closure. Sam's closure is to take all of these things, these models. Now he has solved the mystery. He can put these things away, and he destroys them in the most cinematic way he can think of, which is to throw them in the water.
Except will he destroy them?
Well, whatever.
Is water really going to hurt them?
Is he going to dive down for them, though? Is this going to be a memory snorkel?
All the poor marine wildlife that are going to die, the turtles that are going to eat it and choke to death. Straws are bad.
No, I was going to say, turtles are so full of straws, they cannot get a model figure. And if anything else, the coral will latch on there.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And also, I like the tiny little touch of, you know, the guy who says hi to him as he goes, walks down the pier, as if this guy has seen him every single day for wherever, because he lives right there.
Called him the wrong name forever.
He's like, Sam. He's like, what? Turns out my name is Sam. He's like, oh, well, hi, Sam, or have a good day, Sam. Whatever. It's
nonplussed.
Okay, whatever. Yeah. Today you're Sam. Great. Enjoy it. Yeah. Shit, it's 2021. You could be a girl now. I don't care. But yeah, I thought that was nice. Oh, sorry. You gave me a face like I was making an inappropriate trans joke. Which I maybe could have been. I'm sorry if I offended anybody.
I've been through. No, that's not what my face was for. My face was just like the ending.
It's okay. I'm used to seeing that face. I've seen it many times before.
Oh, well,
you're welcome. I know I am to blame on some of it.
Well, you know, I am the judge. So.
Yes, you are. So that, my trainee told me a story. And my first thought is, oh, yeah, no, that's my brother, Jason. sort of the when my car died and you got out and directed traffic, just with a look and one gesture.
I think one eye and a finger.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great. It's beautiful.
An arched eyebrow, a neck twist, and a finger. Yeah. And that woman almost plowed into another car to get away from me.
Yeah, it worked. See?
No, one of my proudest moments ever.
My memories are of those kind of things, which like I've never been prouder, or slightly scared. But so, what was the memory? There was one, and I think it was part of Wendy's thing, where Wendy said that she had like a breakup or something, but it almost looked like some sort of like mother son incest thing going on. Did you get that, or did I just?
I couldn't tell. I think it was just all incidental.
Yeah, maybe.
I tried to figure it out, and then I just didn't care. I gave up. It was so deliberately choppy because it was multiple people's memories
stopped. You didn't know,
trying to track it because it was. I think the implication they were implying that it was from multiple different test subjects because the footage was all a melange of all these test subjects. So after the third time you'd seen a whole bunch of the memories together, I gave up.
Yeah. 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 So
because again, it didn't matter. It was incidental.
Yeah. No, you're right. And yeah, and everybody's memories are traumatic, but that was kind of the point.
Yeah. But I knew the moment that we saw Gordon on the ground,
mm-hmm.
I knew the machine had killed him. I was like, the machine did it. There's no bullet holes, no blood. Machine did it.
Yeah.
That was the first thing. So from the rest of the movie, I'm like, nah, you know, the butler did it.
Did you think the machine was going to kill Sam?
I thought the machine was going to be malevolent.
Yeah. See, again, if this were a horror movie.
Yeah.
Then this is where everybody associated with the machine would have seen all these villains
or they have these hallucinations and start killing real people because they think they're their apparitions of their lost ones.
And then it turns out the machine actually includes a piece of Stonehenge, and that's how it's getting its power from.
No, it's got an Infinity Stone.
Exactly. Yes, also a piece of Stonehenge. it turns out they're the same. It's very complicated.
Yeah. You're right. It turned out to be much more benign than I think my own mind projected into it.
Well, when I first saw this movie, when I was done with it the first time, I thought, well, you know, this is like a whodunit. It's clever. It's a clever set, like a clever device they used to have this whodunit. But the whodunit part is like any other whodunit, right?
Yeah.
But then the more I thought about it, it was less of a whodunit and more of a kind of a thinky thing. I mean, it was more of a relationships thing.
Well, it was also a bit of a moral, you know, moral tale.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah. Again, it talks about, like, memory. And it kind of focuses on this, you know, you want to keep only the happy memories, right?
Sure.
But the movie is about bad memories. You know, that's what kind of like haunts every character. Is
again,
like,
that's what Gordon's sole premise was, to have a machine that could help heal people's bad memories.
Exactly.
Because he believed that you could cure people. But that was his philosophy.
But the act of trying to erase the memories killed him. You can't erase your memories, man. You are. Again, you're nothing more than the memories that you keep. He thought maybe you couldn't keep them all. Although Todd would argue that, yeah, the ones I didn't keep were for a reason, Jack Wagon.
Well, he did keep them. They were just hidden.
Yeah. If only I'd remembered to not to step in front of my Jeep that had the faulty brakes.
I knew you were going to go there. Oh. Also the fact that they were driving a Jeep that Sam and Dash.
Oh, that's true. Yes, they were driving a Jeep. Yeah. Yeah. Oof. So that's very tragic. So, yeah. Car accidents
suck. That's unfortunate.
Yeah. You can testify. Car accidents suck.
Yeah, no. Airbags are the worst, though, by far. Burns are some of the worst things ever if you survive.
I was going to say, but airbags will save your ass.
Oh, no. No, dying is worse. I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying, of the injuries that I had, including having my cartilage torn from my rib cage and having to have surgery on my knee twice, the airbag burns were the worst, most painful thing ever.
Mm.
Because they didn't go away quickly, and there was nothing that would get rid of the pain.
Ugh. Yeah. Oh, well. Anyway, good times. Yeah. So, any thoughts on... Yeah, any more thoughts on rememory?
No, I took very few notes. The only thing I wrote down was, at the beginning, I'm like, is Lionsgate traditionally a good or bad production company? I can't remember.
Is Lionsgate part of Miramax?
I don't know. I kind of think it is, but you know, that just could be
misremembering. Yeah, I can't remember. Again, yes, memory.
But Lionsgate. This is probably a C movie, C plus, B minus maybe, but I don't know. Maybe I'll have to watch it again. I don't know. It was okay. It was fine. Like I said, I wasn't... It got me. I didn't guess the ending. I didn't guess the twist. It was well acted, certainly. I think it was well acted. We got to see poor Anton Yelchin, whose family settled with the Chrysler Corporation or Fiat USA or whoever it was for lots of money, I'm sure.
By the way, no, Lionsgate is completely its own company.
Are they?
It ended up sucking up some... ended up acquiring some facilities and distributors like Cineplex Film Properties, which is a Montreal-based company. They renamed that as Lionsgate Films. And North Shore Studios, they renamed it as Lionsgate Studios in Vancouver, BC. So it sounds like there's a lot of Canadian stuff going on.
Do you have the ability to open a browser?
Yeah.
I'm going to send you this link. You should look at the first pane, which is the under the videos pane of the trailer for Remember. Well, you should probably look it up on IMDb. You can probably see it on IMDb, but the first trailer is a freeze frame on Anton Yelchin's face, and it's rough.
Oh yeah, he's kind of scummy in this movie.
Oh, he's unhinged.
Yeah, he's working at some sort of scrapyard.
Yeah, I did like the touch where Sam was able to open his safe because
he
watched the dial.
I this movie was well made.
Yeah, no, I mean, it had lots of subtle but important details that singularly didn't necessarily mean much, but in aggregate were very involved.
I think this is almost a perfect mom movie. Like, hopefully maybe, she liked it.
Maybe.
But this is the kind of movie I remember, like, mom liking. Like, it's a sort of a whodunit, but it's deeper than your average. Like, it's not Murder, She Wrote.
It is kind of Agatha Christie-ish.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
But in an artfully done way. So, yeah. So, what's your grade?
As I said, B minus, C plus, somewhere in there. I don't know. We'll have to see.
Yeah.
I think this will be one I'll have to think on for a while.
I watched it again. That's that in a week. Like, in the period of a week, I had to watch it again to see what I really thought. Because the first time I gave it, this is on Letterboxd, the first time I gave it 3 out of 5, and the second time I bumped it up to 3.5.
Oh.
Because it's not quite a 4.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of how I feel.
It's more than a 3.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Peter Dinklage gives it an extra half anyway. I mean, like I said, he really impressed me. But everybody else did a good job, too.
Well, and he drove this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, he was the driver.
This was his movie, yes, for sure.
Yeah, and he did a good job, so.
Yeah, turns out being the driver was part of his trauma. But
I didn't mean it that way, but.
Yeah, you know. Again. Yeah, sometimes you're the windshield, humor. Sometimes you're the bug.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. I'm glad. Thank you for putting up with it. I'm glad I picked it. That it was a happy accident.
You said happy accident, really?
Yeah. Well, unlike them as depicted in this movie, of the three, the three choices I gave you, this was probably the best movie.
The moral of the story is that they probably avoid Jeeps.
You know, well, I don't know. I guess half of the people in the Jeep died and only a third of the people in the Volvo or whatever died.
Mercedes.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, except somebody else in the movie died from a Jeep, so, you know, yeah. Incidental.
Again, I keep thinking about scenes, like the scene where Sam goes and talks to the test subject who killed herself. And Sam does not know she has killed herself.
Yeah, oops.
And the sister who answers the door...
she unloads on him.
But that whole performance where he says, you know, I have her memories if you want to see him. And then it was
almost sinister.
Oh, but both actors were so good in that scene.
Yes, yes.
They did just great. Everybody did a really good job.
Yeah.
Even the guy who plays Gordon with the fisheye, his character was sympathetic too, you know? I mean, sure, he had an affair, but...
Again, the only villain is the Alan Rickman dude.
Yeah.
He was a villain, though.
Oh, he came in and threatened Carolyn. He did threaten Carolyn, yeah.
I mean, he was all about the machine. And, you know, whatever. It's fine. You needed a villain. He was clearly misdirection.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. You know, it's easy to look back now and say, oh, that was complete, you know, it was effective, but it was total misdirection because you thought, you know, sinister. Because they kept implying that. They said in the beginning of the movie, they knew there was a problem with the machine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But nobody was disclosing what exactly the problem was.
But I was waiting for Sam to send down the elevator and Lamont or whatever his name was to open it up, and there was somebody with a sweatshirt that had written in blood, "Ho ho ho! Now I've got a machine gun, motherfucker." But nice. Yeah. Anyway, yippee-ki-yay. Yeah. Okay. So, any housekeeping?
A little. Let's see. First, next week is, oh, so you and Drew are next week. Okay.
Yeah. And then the following week is Age of Ultron, right?
Yeah. So I have to commend your work on editing, but also Drew's work on shepherding his two children. So,
oh, he did a really good job.
No, he did. Yeah. I was impressed. Also, they're really sharp.
The kids? Oh, yeah.
Really?
No.
Really sharp. I realized that they're not, you know, not the 2 and 3 year olds that I'm used to, but, you know, as I age, my memory.
Yeah.
But listening to them, I'm just like, oh, crap. They're smart. Drew better watch out.
Oh, yeah. No, it turns out they have their own opinions about things.
Strong opinions.
Yeah. Yep.
But no. So Brother Drew, good job. It was a good job.
Yeah.
But also good job editing. So.
Oh, you know what? It's funny because it takes work to edit, but it's not like that was extra work. You know, in fact, because of the way it was all recorded together, like if he didn't play the music at the same time, if they had just had a discussion, it would have been harder for them to have that whole discussion, but it would have been easier to edit. But it was fine. They had a lovely conversation that I didn't have to do much with as far as chopping it up.
And good night and good luck.
Yeah. What did you think? Was it okay?
Yeah. Yeah, it was fine.
Yeah.
Oh, it was interesting to go back and just, oh,
I know. December, whoa. 2015. We were laughing about the possibility that Donald Trump would have been the candidate.
No, I predicted.
Well, you did. No, no, no. You had it all the way along. Yeah. You were just being fatalistic, I think, but you got it. You nailed it.
Yeah, fatalistic, but not wrong. Other than that, status quo.
Excellent.
I think Oregon is almost to the final tier of phase. Anyway, so we're not at phase 2 yet, but we're going to be in the final phase 1 next week. And that'll include Jesse. So
great.
So hopefully we'll be done with that, and then the rest of the state sometime in May.
Yeah. Hey, Alaska, man, we're wide open.
No, good job.
Yeah,
I'm impressed.
And we're like, I think we are now like 27% fully vaccinated, and maybe 30-something% single vaccinated.
Mm.
What?
Well, a ways to go.
Well, yeah, of course.
I mean,
well, there's going to be a certain percentage of people that are resistant to it. Or resistant to getting it, you know, reluctant, rather.
Yeah, need 85%, though.
Oh, I know. Hey, I have since I have a procedure coming up, I have to get a COVID test before that procedure is done.
Even though you've been fully vaccinated?
Yep. Which is fine, but it will be my first COVID test, which is wild. But yeah, it'll be wacky if I get a positive COVID test. Anyway, yeah.
Well, but,
people are still getting COVID, of course.
You're getting variants now.
Yeah.
I mean, but...
I know, and we can still get it even though we have the vaccine, hopefully. We'll just get less severe symptoms, right?
Yeah, yes. Or you might get no symptoms at all.
Yeah, which is great. But I think if it is positive, they're not going to do that procedure on me.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm beating around the bush. It's, of course, a penis shortening surgery, just so, you know, because my poor wife has had to deal with it so long. It's a struggle. Hilarious joke. Yeah. No, colonoscopy.
Important things.
Thanks, Mom. Beep. No, it would be important even if we didn't have it in our family.
No, it's important for everyone.
Yeah. But it's so I went to the prep meeting, like the, mm-hmm. where they talk mm-hmm. about prep, but, also
colonoscopy
just
prep.
Yes. Sorry.
Than prep.
No, you're right. I don't mean the drug prep.
Yeah, I know what you meant.
Yeah. Yeah, but isn't there like a something called PrEP that also is a bowel?
Bowel prep.
Prep, yeah. Bowel prep, that's something.
Movie, they have movie prep and bowel prep. And
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Actually, that's they at the pharmacy at Costco, they used to refer to the Costco hot dogs as the Costco bowel prep kit.
Oh, God.
But anyway, yeah, she's like, he's like, oh, you're 50? You haven't had a colonoscopy? No, I just turned 50. I'm like, yeah, he goes, welcome to your 50s. And then I said, so you have anybody in the history? I said, yeah, my mom. What kind of cancer? It's like colon. Oh, and breast. And she says, oh, okay, so you are getting a colonoscopy. Like, yeah. Like, you need one. Yeah, I understand. I get it now. Yeah, I know why I'm here. I could have pooped on a piece of paper and sent it in the mail, but this seems more prudent.
That's the spirit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just well, don't
you
make know, it.
You realize that is the alternative, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I do work in the medical
field.
Oh,
that's true. Okay.
Reasonably,
fit tests, right?
I'm reasonably apprised of, yeah. of, because we run lab services, I'm...
Okay, yeah. Well, I forgot. You had that whole fit test story.
I'm not direct... Yeah. I'm not... I'm not directly involved, but yes, I am aware.
Yeah.
Sometimes scarily aware.
Yeah, they sent me home with one of those, I had just gotten into, I didn't actually end up doing it, but I'd kind of was doing a diet thing where trying to relieve that sweet tooth, I would be eating blueberries. Like frozen blueberries, a little bit of milk at the end of the day. And you're like, it's just great because the frozen blueberries freeze the milk a little bit. So it's almost like ice cream and the blueberries are sweet enough that it's like a dessert. What it does, though, is make your poo purple.
Yes.
So
it is incredibly staining.
Yes. So I'd be sending my Grimace ColoGuard test or whatever back in the mail. They'd be like opening it and saying, purple? Like, what is this all about? Anyway.
That's no shamrock shake.
Yeah. So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you wanna catch an episode. They talk movies, so they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away unless you're driving. Keep them open in that case. We got Aaron, Drew, and Brother Jay, welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Hey. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way.